You're listening to episode 95 of the Mad Chatters Podcast, July 20th, 2016.
Most everyone's mad here.
Hey there, and welcome back to another episode of the Mad Chatters Podcast, your very important date with the happenings at Walt Disney World and around the Disney universe. My name is Derek, and joining me today are my fellow hosts, Matthew.
Howdy.
And Jeremy.
Living for the day, pussycat.
Matt, it's so great to have you back. We missed you last week. We were kind of floundering a bit without you.
Oh, I know. I listened.
Ouch.
No, I just got done telling you I enjoyed it. So okay. I really did enjoy it, although I missed being with you guys.
Of course. Well, we are glad you're back. And on today's show, we have something exciting. We've got special guest Mark Willard, who has been on the show before. He's going to come on and talk to us about the grand opening of Shanghai Disneyland, which he was fortunate enough to be present for. So we're definitely looking forward to that. But first, we're going to do a segment that I really enjoy called The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. Jeremy, would you like to do the honors of introducing this segment to any new listeners we might have?
Of course. The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is a segment in which we look at an aspect of the Walt Disney parks and we decide if it's good, if it's bad, which doesn't mean bad, but it means it's kind of good but could be better, and then if it's ugly, which means it's ugly.
Wait, we decide these things? That's deep.
I mean, it is our show, so we do decide.
That's right. That's right.
All right, so what are we talking about today?
Today's Good, Bad, and Ugly is celebrity cameos in a Walt Disney World attraction. Mm. Now, I assume this means it can be a voiceover or the actual celebrity's face appearing. But, yeah, so let's start with the good.
Okay, I'll go first.
Do we usually start with the good?
Yeah, we start with the good.
Okay, I thought so.
Episode 95. I will start with the good, and I have to go with Martin Short in O Canada.
Oh, you turd.
Because you don't like him or because I took your answer?
Because you took my answer.
Oh, okay.
You also took answer. Just for the record, I have a backup, though.
Wow. We all like Martin Short. That's good to know. The thing is, I didn't see O Canada the first several times I went to Epcot. And then our third or fourth trip, it was like, okay, I guess we'll see it. And I really loved it. And not just because it's like, wow, Canada has a lot more beautiful scenery than I expected, but also because Martin Short makes that film. Without him, I don't think it would be half as enjoyable. He's energetic. He's enthusiastic about his home country. And it just kind of rubs off on you.
It is the perfect blend between not too much celebrity shoved down your throat and not too much country. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's the perfect blend between showing the country for the beauty and charm that it is, but still keeping it lighthearted and fun. And I think some of the other films in Epcot could learn from that.
Mm. AKA all of the other films in Epcot.
Well, you know, it's just like, if you want people to see it, you have to cater to them in some way. And I know the Epcot enthusiasts were probably vomiting all over themselves as I say that. Because, you know, I'm sure there's a hardcore section of the internet that loves Impressions de France or whatever it is. But, you know, they could use maybe Celine Dion, you know. No, she's from Canada.
She's Canadian.
That's right. Who's a French star? Who's
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, no, no, no.
We just kidding.
Well, who's the French star that peed on the airplane? You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Depardieu. You know, let him just urinate all over the theater, you know, during the film as he narrates. And maybe in China, Jackie Chan. That would be fun.
Oh, help us. No, these ideas are terrible.
These are terrible.
Well, anyways, Martin Short is good, but I have a backup.
Okay, you go.
Okay, my good is Judy. My backup is Judy Dench in Spaceship Earth. Now, I know, again, the Epcot purists are going to be rolling over in their proverbial graves. But because Judy Dench's narration, the script, the controversy, if you would, is that her script is very dumbed down for the general public when you compare it to Walter Cronkite and Jeremy Irons of narration past. But that does not negate the fact that Judy Dench is a national treasure and just actually she's an international treasure because she's from Britain, and but we love her and treasure her here. I just think her elegance shines through on an attraction that demands elegance. I think you have to have somebody who can take you to another level. You know, Gilbert Godfrey could not narrate Spaceship Earth and do it any justice. You know, you need a Judy Dench, you need a Patrick Stewart, an Ian McKellen, one of those old British people to do it and do it well. Angela Lansbury, somebody like that. So, shout out to Judy.
Those are good names. Yeah, there are lots of different versions of the British accent, but it doesn't get much better than Judy Dench.
True. We don't need Dick Van Dyke's Bert.
Cockney.
Cockney.
Like a grinding rocket.
Wow. I think we ought to get the transcript and do the whole thing.
Derek and I together simultaneously. Yeah. It's like yeah. That.
All planet.
You're going to
vomit all over ourselves. That's what Jeremy said.
With my good, I moved it up from bad because I do like it, and it was honestly very, very close to being switched. But my good is now Jamie Lee Curtis in Universe of Energy. For one moment only, she gets on my list, and that's the when Ellen actually wins the thing, and the face she makes at her and claps. Like that. You can't see my face, but I made the face. Go watch it. That's a wonderful, funny moment.
I also love when Ellen keeps getting questions right, and it's on her face the whole time, and her face is just like, what's happening? Like, for like yeah. several minutes. It's just that face over and over again.
Yeah, that's a great, I mean, I love that attraction, but The little celebrity cameos, the little feel-good celebrity cameos of the late 90s never disappoint.
Yeah. No, she's great. We used to call her Stupid Ellen.
Stupid Judy, Stupid Energy.
All right, now moving on to bad, which is, again, not bad in the sense that it's bad, but bad in the sense that it's not good and could be better.
Right. Basically, Good, Bad, and the Ugly was a really catchy name for this, when really it should be called Good, Okay, and Bad.
We're always apologizing for it, but it's okay.
It's okay. It's who we are.
Okay. Is it okay or is it bad?
Well, actually, that's funny that you say that, because my bad really is bad, but there's a reason it's not ugly. My answer is Steven Tyler. And the truth of the matter is, it's really bad. Like, he's really, really bad in that attraction, in that pre-show for Rock and Roller Coaster. But I don't want anyone else to do the pre-show for Rock and Roller Coaster because it's so much fun to watch. Like, I don't get tired of it. You know, all the time we quote that, wait a minute. I love that idea because it's just so terribly, hilariously bad.
Yes.
But perfect. Mm-hmm. And so while I can't call it good, I don't want it to go away.
My bad comes to us also from Epcot, like Martin Short and Judy Dench. And it's bad not because of the celebrity, because I think the celebrity fits the attraction, but it's bad because the attraction is so terrible. And that is Gary Sinise in Mission Space. You know, I'm not a huge Gary Sinise fan. I don't dislike him. You know, I'm sure he's good in a lot of the things he's done. And I think he fits that attraction because he has that sort of... Well, what was he? He was in that movie about Mars, right?
Yeah, Mission to Mars.
Yeah, plus he was in Apollo 13, so he has a space connection. So, you know, when you think Gary Sinise, you think Wounded Warriors and you think space. And so he fits there. However, he's underused, I think, and the attraction is just terrible. But I like I like the idea of Gary Sinise in a space attraction.
Okay, I can see that. He was actually my original ugly because I don't really find anything redeeming about that pre-show. Like, this is an Academy Award nominated actor, and he has zero charisma. I mean, I guess that's kind of the point, like, that it's a very, like, this is your mission, let's take it seriously, but...
It's intimidating, yeah.
It is, yeah. I'm like, okay.
Does Gary Sinise ever have charisma, though?
Well, then why cast him for a Disney World attraction?
I'm just saying, that's his persona.
That's true.
My bad is a repeat, but it's my bad, and that is Judi Dench. And I love Spaceship Earth, and I love her voice. I do not like the narration they have written for her voice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I like the classic quotes. There's some parts I do like, but, you know, I am one of those that when I heard it for the first time, and maybe I was just influenced by all the naysayers who talked about how dumbed down it was, I thought this is very dumbed down and almost like I'm watching a PBS special for children.
Today is the letter C for communication.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, don't hold that against Judi Dench.
No, I don't. That's why I say I love her voice, love the attraction, and that's why it's bad or okay. Well, bad really means bad really means okay.
The good, the okay, and the ugly.
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, should we get to our ugly choices for today? Well, I already said Gary Sinise would be mine. But I'll do another one that we've talked about on this show. And I had to look up her name, but it's Ileana Douglas. Ileana, maybe. And this is the actress who's in the Rock and Roller Coaster pre-show with Aerosmith. With Aerosmith, with Steven Tyler. Because we've talked about how, like, she's a professional actress. She should be at a level higher than the band members who are in the pre-show with her. But she's not. Like, at some point, I think she's worse.
She's way worse.
Maybe it's because, like, I hold her to a higher standard.
Sorry, folks. We gotta go.
That was actually a really good line reading of her line.
You're only as strong as your weakest link.
Yeah. Maybe that's it. I think she's the weak... Well, she's probably not the weakest link, but, like, she should not be on the same plane as Steven Tyler. And she is.
Wasn't she in Frasier?
Yeah. I found a website that actually listed quite a few things she was on.
Must be, like, a character actress or something.
Yeah, well, she was not meant to play a manager of a band.
And just a side note, do you think they get, like, a royalty check every time that plays? Because, you know, like, if a sitcom goes into syndication, like, and an episode plays, like, on TBS, let's just say, they get, you know, whoever's in that show gets a little chunk every time it plays. So I wonder if they have some kind of a deal where...
I'm sure Disney thought through that before they made up the contracts and made sure that nothing like that would happen.
Or... I'm sure what they're paid is included in the contract.
Yeah, maybe. That'd be a good deal, though.
Yeah, for real.
That's why Patrick Warburton was so sad that he was out of Soarin'. Because he thought, man, that check's gone.
Oh, that should have been my good.
That was one of my backups.
Too late.
Yeah. But we all like him. He's good.
My ugly is in Ellen's Energy Adventure because it is the most random, stupid celebrity cameo in any Walt Disney attraction ever made. And that is... Michael Richards as the caveman during Ellen's Energy Adventure.
Yeah.
What the heck is going on with that? First off, Michael Richards hasn't been... I guess he was relevant at the time the attraction was made. Because that was kind of in the middle of Seinfeld fever. But who thought that was a good idea to make him a caveman that dances on the screen for like 6 seconds?
Right.
Like, even, I feel like if I rode this attraction in 1996 and that scene came on, I would go, was that Kramer? And nowadays, you don't even, most people, well, not most people, but a certain generation of people don't even know who Kramer is. So, what a waste. Just what a weird, just, I just want to know the mindset behind who decided that was going to be I'm just picturing the storybook me. Guys, I got this hilarious idea. You know the guy that plays Kramer? He's going to be a caveman, and he's going to dance for just a few seconds. It's going to be awesome.
It's almost like that was a deleted scene from Seinfeld that they never used, and they were like, let's plug it in to that Disney attraction they're starting.
It's really cheap, guys. We can get a good deal on it. And people love Michael Richard until he became a racist.
I was going to say, was that at the time when he needed to like rebrand his image or anything?
No, that was way after.
Okay. I'm kind of surprised it's still in there.
You're right.
You know, the way Disney is so...
Bill Cosby is gone.
Exactly. But Michael Richard's still there.
What was Bill Cosby in?
His bust.
Oh, the bust. That's right. Yeah, yeah.
His... My ugly is... It's an extinct attraction. Is that okay?
Sure.
It was Drew Carey from Sounds Dangerous. All around, horrible attraction, horrible... I mean, here's the thing. You only see him for a minute of the whole attraction. And then you sit in silence and hear his voice the whole time. I like Drew Carey, but this was just not a good attraction. And it was not a good, like... He was not a good draw for it.
And you know what's weird, too, is kind of like he's become like the Ellen... syndrome, I guess we can say, the Ellen syndrome, where arguably more popular now than he was when that attraction was there.
Yeah, because of The Price is Right.
Are you familiar with the attraction, like what happens?
You know what's funny? We never did that attraction, and the only thing, this is kind of random, but the only thing I think every time someone mentions Sounds Dangerous is the time the bird pooped on Jeremy right as we were walking past Dangerous. That's what I think of every single time.
It was all about the binaural audio deal. So you got a pair of headphones and sat in this theater, and he was an undercover cop, and you were going to go with him via this microphone and camera on him. The camera goes out, and so you literally sit in the pitch black theater for the next 5 minutes, going through all these things with him, like a swarm of bees and all this stuff.
There's like a haircut, right? Like a razor or
yes,
something?
Yes, it's kind of like when you think about it, you know, you've wasted all that money on a celebrity that you don't even see.
Hmm.
So, I mean, maybe they only spent money for him for like the 1 minute he filmed, and then they're like, okay, we'll get the audio for the rest.
I don't know. I would love to see them bring Drew Carey back, though, in some way now. Not for Sounds Dangerous, but in some aspect. Because like I said, he's on top of his game right now, if Price is Right.
You know what I'm shocked about is that Neil Patrick Harris is nowhere in Walt Disney World.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm very surprised by this. I mean, I shouldn't have said that because now they're going to be like, you're right. We got to put them in every park.
Every park. Universe of Energy with Neil Patrick Harris's Energy Adventure.
He's going to be a random Star Wars character in some attraction in Star Wars Land.
Stop.
He's going to be blue in Avatar Land as a Nanu Nanu or whatever they're called.
Nanu Nanu.
That's Mork and Mindy.
Oh, my bad.
Navi.
I was way off.
Nanu Nanu.
Time for another match of the game! And now, here's your match of the host, Match of the Derek!
Yes, thank you, Steve. Thank you. So today, I'm going to host a game between Matt, Jeremy, and our special guest of honor, Mark. And the game we're playing today is... I'm calling it Disney... in 6 seconds. And if you've ever played the game 5 second rule, it's basically that, except two major differences. One is that I'm giving you 6 seconds instead of five, and the other is that it's mostly Disney things. So here's how it works. I'm going to read a category to one of you, and you're going to have 6 seconds to name three things that fall in that category. So I hope your mind is working fast today. And if you can't name three things, then I'll go to the next person. and they'll have to name three things in the same category, but the catch is they can't name anything that's already been named. And then if they can't do that, then the third person will get a chance, and if he can't name three new things that haven't been named, then the person I originally asked the question to will get the point. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Makes sense. So wait, if the first person names three, then does it move on to the next category, or does
yes.
each okay.
Yeah, yeah. So got if it. So Jeremy goes first and he names all three, then I'll give you a new category and Jeremy will get that point.
Got it.
Okay. So before we started, I randomly drew to see the order he would go in, because I don't want you to accuse me of being unfair. And we're gonna go Jeremy and then Matt and then Mark. And I will say something like time when it's been 6 seconds. Okay, so Jeremy, name three attractions on which you might get wet.
Splash Mountain, Pirates of the Caribbean.
Okay, Mark, go.
Kali River Rapids, Grizzly River Run, River Rapids.
Okay, for
so
the record,
I can't name the same ones.
Right, and for the record, we're talking Walt Disney World. I'm sorry, I should have clarified that.
Oh, well, good
we can't. Oh,
okay, Matt.
So I guess Grizzly River Rapids did not qualify.
Right. Okay, Matt, go.
Frozen Ever After, Grand Fiesta Tour, and Small World.
Do you get wet on Grand Fiesta Tour?
You might.
You did say might.
Okay.
Are we assuming that you have someone splashing you in your boat?
My wife sat on a wet seat in Grand Fiesta Tour.
Okay.
When you go by the restaurant, someone might throw their water at you.
Margaritas.
I don't know. How do you guys feel about his answers?
Frozen was a good one. Okay. That, you definitely can get wet on that. The other two, I'm not so sure about.
I know.
You did say might. You left
okay.
the door open.
You
there.
Are right. I'm going to give it to you. I was also thinking things like PhilharMagic, a bug. It's a tough to be a bug. But anyway, okay. I will give you the point.
It's a tough to be a bug.
I can't flub over my words one time without you making fun of me and calling me out.
It's funny for everyone.
Okay. All right. So that means, Jeremy, it's back to you.
Yes.
Name three attractions that feature screens.
It's Tough to Be a Bug, PhilharMagic, and Oh Canada.
No, you didn't quite get it in time.
Oh.
So, Mark, go.
Toy Story Mania, Soarin', Reflections of China.
There you go. Very good. Okay, so Matt, we're to you. Death. And I want you to name three attractions with interactive cues.
Peter Pan's Flight, Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, and Space Mountain.
Pretty good.
Nailed it.
Jeremy, name three places in Walt Disney World where you'll see an elephant.
Kilimanjaro Safaris, Dumbo, and Jungle Cruise.
Are there elephants on Kilimanjaro Safaris?
Yes!
Yes.
Okay, I honestly couldn't remember.
Aww.
Okay.
I was like, kind of freaking
Do
out.
Do you deserve a Disney podcast?
I know, all I could picture was... I hate you. Okay. Mark, name three table service restaurants in Disney's Hollywood Studios.
Mama Melrose, the Brown Derby, and... Oh, gosh.
Time. Okay, Matt, go.
Hollywood and Vine, Fifth Prime Time Cafe, and I think that's it.
Time.
No, there's one that... I can only think of one. Sci-fi cafe or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Mark gets the point.
I think we named them all, though. Is there any others we missed?
I can't think of any now. Okay, so back to...
Matt.
Yes. Name three extinct Magic Kingdom attractions.
Mickey Mouse Review, Timekeeper, and...
Time.
Dadgum.
Jeremy, go.
Alien, America Sings, and
and Mark.
Swan Boats, Delta Dream Flight, and Mission to Mars.
Oh.
Bingo.
Nailed it.
Swan Boats, that's nice.
Also, America Sings was Disneyland.
Oh, you right.
Oh, calling you out on that one. Okay.
Boom shakalaka.
Matt, name three restaurants that have the word cafe in their names.
Rainforest Cafe.
Time.
Okay.
Jeremy, go.
Whispering Canyon Cafe. Starring Rolls Cafe. Is that right?
Yeah. Time.
Primetime 50s Cafe. Oh, jeez. I'm not up on my restaurants.
Okay. So the point goes to Matt.
Yay. I get points for everybody sucking.
Well, you know. Contempo Cafe, Grand Floridian Cafe.
Hello, oh, we all can't have the list in front of us.
No, I feel dumb.
Hey, I don't have the list in front of me. Thank you very much.
Do.
No, I don't. I just wrote down the categories.
You sit on a throne of lies.
Okay. So that brings us to Jeremy. Name three items you can buy in the shape of Mickey's head.
A pretzel, a magnet, a pen.
Okay, Mark. Name three Magic Kingdom attractions that are not in Disneyland.
Oh, man. PhilharMagic, People Mover, and...
Time.
Oh, jeez.
Matt.
Stitch's Great Escape, Monsters, Inc., Laugh Floor, Carousel of Progress.
Yeah. That'll work.
Wow, right there in Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jeremy.
Yes.
Name three monorail colors.
Blue, pink, purple. Teal.
I cannot give you that. I'm sorry.
Wait, which color's wrong?
I think pink and purple.
Well, purple's the one that crashed.
Well, okay, that's true. I didn't say current. Okay, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. Because you said purple, teal. And what was the first one?
Blue.
Okay, I'll give you that. Okay, I guess this kind of harkens back. I'll skip this one because it was going to be animals you'll see on Kilimanjaro safaris. Clearly, I don't know, so I'll skip it. Okay, so Mark, name three attractions on which you wear 3D glasses.
PhilharMagic, Tough to be a Bug, and Star Tours.
Okay, barely. But good job. It is 4-4, and then Jeremy has three, so it's very close. And Matt, that comes to you. Attractions with names that start with P.
Peter Pan's Flight, Pirates of the Caribbean, and Poo Poo. I don't know.
I cannot accept that. Jeremy, go.
PhilharMagic. President's Hall.
What? I'm not even sure PhilharMagic counts.
Yeah, I was going to give it to you, but I get you. Okay, and Mark.
Yeah, I got nothing for this one.
Yeah, that is kind of hard now that I think about it. Okay, well, Matt gets that point.
Hooray.
Good job for naming two. Okay, Jeremy, name three characters in Wish's Nighttime Spectacular who say, I wish.
Aladdin. Cinderella, Snow White, Cinderella.
Yeah, very good.
I wish I could go to the ball.
Yes. Mark, name three attractions on which you wear a seatbelt.
Test Track, Star Tours, and Soarin'.
Yeah. 5-4.
Dang it.
Matt, name three food items that are exclusive to Walt Disney World Resort hotels.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, my.
hold on. I'm not...
No.
That's so ambiguous.
Time. I mean, it can be any food item at a resort hotel that you can't get in a park. Jeremy.
The Grand Floridian Cupcake, the Contemporary Cupcake, and the Polynesian Cupcake.
Yes!
I'm gonna have to say no on that one. Mark.
S'mores Cupcake, Oreo Bonbon Cupcake, and... Oh, man.
Time. I was going to take you at your word on those. I have no idea.
Ohana Chicken Skewer. I don't know.
Well, yeah, that would count. Ohana Bread Pudding, Zebra Domes.
The Tonga Toast. Tonga Toast, I just remember
Tonga
that.
Tonga Toast. Magic Cookie Bar.
Wait, Are Zebra Domes exclusive, or can you get them in Animal Kingdom? I think Cusafiri Bakery
you get them at, the has Zuri Sweets or whatever.
What?
Maybe.
Yeah, pretty sure you can get them in the park.
Oh, I thought I looked there this last trip and didn't see him. I mean, you could be right.
What is that racket?
Sorry, I'm just getting a snack.
It's like, I'll wait for Grandpa to eat his butterscotch. Okay, so Matt got that point, which takes us to Jeremy. Jeremy, name three attractions that feature films or movies as pre-shows.
Dinosaur, Soarin', and Stitch's Great Escape. The first pre-show.
Okay, yes, you're right. Okay, so Mark, name three experiences. And I'm not going to be specific because it'll give it away. So just any experiences at Walt Disney World with Mickey's name in the title.
Mickey's Frontier Magic, Chef Mickey's, Mickey at Main Street Town Square Theater.
Yeah, yeah. Good job. Matt, name three attractions that use manufactured smells.
Soarin', Journey into Imagination, and Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Jeremy, name three dining locations that begin with C.
Chef Mickey, Captain Cook's, Captain Cook's, is that right? Captain Cook's something?
Yes.
Citricus.
Well, you were past time because you asked. Okay, Mark, go.
Oh crap, wasn't prepared. Oh, sorry. Yeah,
that's time.
Yeah, I don't. That was bad.
Okay, Matt.
Coral Reef, Contempo Cafe, and the California Grill.
Oh, well, very done. Nice.
Well done. You took the lead with that one.
Yay!
Back to Jeremy. Name three. There are only two left. So this one and the next one. Jeremy, name three parking lot sections in Epcot.
Discovery, believe, creativity. Creative.
I'm sorry, no. You were sort of kind of close. Okay, Mark, go.
Create, explore, journey.
Yeah. That'll do it. Now, if this gets back to Mark and he gets it right, we have a tie. Otherwise, Matt takes it. So Matt, your last question for this game is name three places where you will hear the song Part of Your World.
Wishes, Voyage of the Little Mermaid, and Ariel's Undersea Little Mermaid Ride in Fantasyland.
Yes. Is it in Wishes? I'm just trying to remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
Wait, is it?
Formal protest.
You know what? No, it's in the Music, Magic, and Mayhem.
Okay, so Jeremy, go.
Fantasmic, the Animation Courtyard, and...
Okay, Mark, you're up.
Celebrate the Magic, Festival of Fantasy.
That was time, so Matt gets the point.
Boom shakalaka.
Which means... Matt takes it with 9 points, Mark got second with 7, and Jeremy had 5. So I was also thinking of Philhar Magic, but that's all I had on my list, so for the Part of Your World, that is. Oh, Steve, do you want to close us out?
Steve's going through a little bit of a change, and he would like you to respect his wishes and his decisions. So instead of Steve from now on, take it away, Stephanie.
Congratulations, Matthew! You've won another Mad Cheddar game! Join us next time, same Mad Cheddar podcast, same Mad Cheddar pod! Thank you.
So, Mark, you went to Shanghai Disneyland. Let's talk about that.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Okay, well, let's go back. I guess let's go back to the beginning and talk a little bit about how this trip came together. So when did you decide you wanted to go? How long has this been in the planning stages? What kind of hitches did you run into as you planned? Things like that.
Well, it actually was not in the planning stages as long as you may think. So I was on the trip with the Brickers, Tom and Sarah Bricker, who most people, if they are familiar with me and my photography, they probably know of Tom Bricker and his photography as well. Tom and Sarah run DisneyTouristBlog.com together. I'm good friends with them, and we've been talking about wanting to go to Shanghai Disneyland. I think at least since the beginning of 2016, maybe a little before then. And we really, the question was, do we want to go there for opening, or do we want to, you know, wait until things calm down a little bit? And, you know, if there's some question if things are going to be open in time for the grand opening, you know, do we want to wait until later? And it was really the weekend that tickets went on sale where we just kind of spontaneously decided, hey, if we can get opening day tickets, we're going to go for the grand opening. And so that was Easter weekend of this year that we decided on that. And as is often typical, when there is an internet rollout of something with high demand, getting tickets turned out to not be a simple, painless experience. Me and Tom and Sarah, all of us were, I wasn't physically with them. I was communicating with them online, but we were all at our laptops refreshing the Shanghai Disneyland website for probably over an hour until thankfully a mutual friend of ours, Arthur, was able to get tickets for us. And when we were able to get tickets, we decided, you know, this trip is going to happen. So that was when we decided was Easter of this year. And so only a few months before we ended up going.
Wow. I don't know if I could have done that. I am a big planner, and that is not enough time to plan a trip over across the world. But it seemed to have worked out for you, so.
But yeah. If I remember right, you had difficulties, though, with your plane, correct?
I did. That was pretty frustrating. I'm not sure how much listeners would necessarily be interested in that. That actually wasn't related to the fact that the trip was put together so quickly. That was the fact that when you're traveling to China, it's important to understand the visa rules and visa requirements. Normally, if you're a United States passport holder, you would need a visa to enter China. However, they do have certain rules in place. If you are entering Shanghai and leaving Shanghai for a different country than the one you entered from, and you're going through Pudong International Airport both ways, then and you're there for less than 144 hours, you don't need a visa. It's called the Transit Without Visa program, which I and the Brickers were participating in. We decided to add Hong Kong onto our trip rather than get a travel visa because, you know, we're over there, we might as well, and then that way we don't have to worry about a visa. Well, unfortunately, Air Canada, who I was scheduled to fly on the morning I was supposed to leave, their check-in agents were not familiar with that rule and wouldn't allow me to board because they did not think that I had the necessary documentation to pass customs in China. So that was kind of a nightmare. I ended up having to get rebooked on United the next day. So I did eventually end up getting there, but more than 24 hours later than when I was supposed to arrive.
That's a shame. Now, you did still make it for opening day, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Thankfully, I still made it. So opening day was June 16th. I arrived on June 15th. I was originally supposed to arrive June 14th. But that didn't impact the Disney portion of the trip at all.
Good, good. Because that's where it would get really frustrating, as if it wasn't frustrating enough, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so opening day of a Disney park, like, this is a really big deal. You know, we've never done that. I'm guessing you probably have not done that either, because it doesn't happen very often. So what was it like? Like, were there opening celebrations of any kind? What were the crowds like? Did they have any, like, special giveaways or anything like that? Like, what can you expect when you're at the opening day of a brand new Disney park?
Well, I'm not sure how much of our experience would necessarily be applicable at future park openings. You know, I think every one of them is going to be different. So there was a grand opening ceremony where Bob Iger spoke and some Chinese dignitaries spoke as well. I wish I could tell you more about it, but I actually didn't see it because that was for VIPs only. All of the regular park guests were actually basically waiting outside in holding corrals until around noon when the opening ceremonies were over, and that's when we were allowed into the park. We were really concerned that opening day was going to be crazy, that the crowd levels would be terrible. What was really nice, and we didn't know this in advance, was that for opening day, they actually capped attendance at a little below 75% of capacity, is what we were told by people who seemed to be in the know. So that was actually, of the 3 days we were in the park, that was the least crowded of those 3 days was opening day, ironically. So the lines that day really were not bad at all, but aside from the later opening and some additional fireworks in the fireworks show that night, it was essentially a normal park day. Like, there wasn't, you wouldn't have necessarily known that was opening day versus any of the other days on our trip. I mean, they were handing out some buttons and some certificates that said, you know, I was there for the grand opening, but they were also handing those out the next 2 days when we were there as well. So if someone has one of those buttons or certificates, that could mean they were there for opening day, or it could mean they were there shortly after opening day. So
now the Bob Iger thing, was that the thing that they showed on American TV here?
I believe so. So it's funny, my friends who were here watching that, I don't know whether they were watching it on American TV or a live stream or whatever, but they saw more of that ceremony than I did. I need to look it up and actually watch it at some point, but I haven't done that yet.
Well, I have a complaint about it. We didn't talk about this. They did it, and it was like a 30-minute thing. It was on ABC Family. It was on Disney Channel. Like, it was a great idea, except they had this girl decide to narrate the whole thing, and it drove me crazy. I was like, shut her up and let us enjoy the things.
I can't believe we haven't talked about this. Like, someone would scale a wall, and it would, like, put that in a small window in the bottom of the screen, and it would show her, and she'd be like, now they're scaling a wall. And it was so annoying.
In China, they have a wall. It's a great wall in China. And I'm like,
oh, I think I heard about this. Was this a Disney Channel star?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I heard from other people who were not happy about that aspect of the broadcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's not her fault, but
talk about dumbing down Spaceship Earth. They dumbed down the opening of Shanghai Disney to such a level that I just wanted to murder someone.
Yeah, I couldn't finish it. I fast-forwarded the last 10 minutes because I'm like, I can't handle her. But it looked like all the stuff they did on-site around the castle looked incredible. So I'm sure it was a sight to behold, but not so much on a 40-inch flat screen. So, okay, so what were some of your first impressions of just Shanghai Disneyland in general?
I really didn't know what to expect going into the park. I mean, obviously Disney and all the official marketing had really hyped it up a lot, but I knew it was very far behind the initially projected opening date, and I'd heard all kinds of stories about things that had gone wrong or were going wrong, and there were a lot of news articles about local people not respecting the park, and so I really wasn't sure, you know, what to expect. But my first impressions of the park were overwhelmingly positive. I had a lot of reservations about the Mickey Avenue, which is kind of their version of Main Street USA. They don't have a Main Street USA in the way that we would think of it, but it's almost like a mixture between Toontown and Main Street USA. That's kind of the entry land. And I wasn't in love with the concept when I first heard of it, but in person, it works really well, and it was designed incredibly well. I thought the park overall is beautiful, and it's absolutely enormous as well. And so the scale of it is really impressive when you're walking through it. I would say that's also possibly its biggest weakness right now is there are a lot of parts of the park that are. They seem to be set aside for expansion pads and future development, which means right now there's kind of a lot of dead space. But still, the scale and the size of the different lands and areas really takes your breath away when you see them. The castle is gorgeous. The Treasure Cove and Adventure Isle lands, I would say both of those are... you know, they would fit in as ports at Tokyo DisneySea, which if you're familiar with Tokyo DisneySea and the level of execution at that park, that's intended as very high praise. So I was really impressed overall by the park. And the very first thing we did, we ran to get in line for Pirates of the Caribbean, Battle for the Sunken Treasure, because that was probably the most hyped attraction there. What we didn't realize was that it's also the highest capacity attraction, and we should have ran to get in line for something that would typically have a longer wait. But in any case, that's what we did first, and that attraction is absolutely worthy of the hype. Again, that's something that I had personally had some reservations about. I knew it was heavily screen-based, and personally I'm not a huge fan of that generally, but the scale of the showrooms in that attraction, the scale and detail of the physical sets, the quality of the animatronics, some of the most impressive, probably actually the most impressive animatronics I've ever seen in my life. It's obvious that they didn't just rely on screens. Screens were integrated where necessary, but you're on the attraction for probably over a minute before you see your first screen, and just the overall level of depth and quality and detail in that attraction blew me away. I would say in terms of the attractions, that's definitely the highlight of the park.
Now, you're not an actual... I mean, you're in a boat, but it on the video, it seems like the boat moves in different directions.
Yes, that is true. So from what I understand, it's the trackless technology, which we unfortunately, I don't think there's any Disney U.S. attractions that are trackless.
The only one I can think of is maybe the new Luigi's Rollickin' Roadsters.
Oh, yeah, that might be. I haven't done that yet. I'm not too familiar with that. But... If anyone's familiar with Pooh's Honey Hunt in Tokyo or Mystic Manor in Hong Kong, it's that kind of technology is what is moving the boat around. It's magnetic, so there is no track, and the boat goes in all kinds of different directions. But you are in a real boat that's really in water, and it's pretty impressive. And I've been told that the upcoming boat ride in Avatar Land Animal Kingdom will be based on the same technology, which nice. When I found that out after experiencing Battle for the Sunken Treasure in Shanghai, that made me a lot more excited for that boat ride.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because we've talked about on our show how we were also kind of hesitant about the technology, but then when you watch on-ride videos, whoever's filming it and everyone in the boat loses their minds when they ride it. So obviously they're enjoying something that we're not seeing. So it must just not translate very well to videos.
Yeah. I think the scale of that attraction is really difficult to capture in a video, especially if you're watching it on a smaller screen. For me, It was the most wow moments I've had on an attraction really since the first time I rode Indiana Jones in Disneyland. You know, in Indiana Jones, there's that huge impact moment when you first enter the main temple chamber, and it's just the scale of that room is enormous, and it kind of takes your breath away. Like, you can't believe that's, you know, this is part of a theme park attraction. Like, it's just, yeah, it's so huge and immersive and expansive. There are multiple rooms in Battle for the Sunken Treasure that have that same impact, where it's just like, holy cow, I cannot believe that this is, they actually built something this massive for this attraction. So that really blew me away experiencing that.
So besides, you kind of talked about, I'm sorry, I forget already, the Mickey section that's not Main Street USA, but kind of Main Street USA.
Yes, Mickey Avenue.
Yeah, yeah. So besides that, what were some of like the biggest differences you noticed between Shanghai Disneyland and the U.S. parks? I mean, for instance, I still find it so weird that there's no train. Was that like a noticeable thing, or once you get in the park, was it really not a big deal?
Yeah, that, I mean, there's a lot you could potentially talk about there in terms of, so much of what makes Disneyland and a Disney castle style park is bound up in the personal passions and interests of Walt Disney and what appealed to him and what he cared about. And obviously, for anyone who's familiar with Walt Disney, trains are a huge part of that. There's a quote of his, which I'm going to butcher, but when he was first describing Disneyland before it had been built, when it was still in the concept stage, he said something like, I want it to be like nowhere else in the world, and there will be a train going around it. And so even from the very beginning, trains were really important. And so that conceptually, as a Disney nerd, you could argue there is something significant about there not being a train there. And I think Disney kind of tacitly acknowledged in the design of the park that how important fundamentally trains are to the way we conceive castle parks, because you still enter through a train station, even right, though there's no train and there's no train track. And I think there's probably multiple reasons, all of which make sense, why Shanghai Disneyland is so different. I mean, you don't have Main Street USA, you don't have a train. I think you kind of have to let Shanghai Disneyland be its own thing, independent of what we conceive of a Disneyland as a Disneyland style park should be. You know, I think obviously Walt Disney would have, for many reasons, which we could talk about, would have never conceived of a park in mainland China. And so I think it's okay for Shanghai Disneyland to be its own thing and be separate from that.
I mean, I think it should be, absolutely. Because yeah, you think, yeah, you talked about Disney Tokyo Sea and how, you know, many rave it as the best Disney park in the world, and it's completely unique.
Yes,
now,
absolutely.
You keep saying Shanghai, is that the proper pronunciation, or is that a Mark Wheeler
choice?
Well,
we're not all from Missouri, so.
So, I've been told that you're supposed to say Shanghai. Tom was recently making fun of me and Sarah because he says that pronunciation sounds really pretentious. So you can call me pretentious for saying it that way if you want, but I believe that is supposed to be the correct pronunciation.
That's like when people call it Ibiza instead of Ibiza in Spain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. It's just like that.
I'm just saying it comes across as pretentious. But no, I didn't say think you were being pretentious. I just was curious if we Americans had been saying it wrong, or if that was just a personal choice that you decided to call it Shanghai instead of Shanghai, which there was no judgment if you did.
Well, while we're on the topic, was language barrier an issue there? Like, I know they brought a lot of U.S. cast members over for the big opening, but how much of a balance was it between English speakers and, I don't know, Mandarin? I'm not quite sure what they speak there, but...
Yes, so Mandarin is the spoken language, and that was another thing that I kind of had reservations about. Now, I previously visited all of the other international parks. And with both international Disney parks and international travel in general, usually if you know English, that's enough to get by. You may not understand everything, but you understand enough and you'll do okay. I was a little worried about that in mainland China because I wasn't expecting them to necessarily be as accommodating of foreign guests from what I had heard. However, that turned out to be totally unfounded. Shanghai as a city was very accommodating to foreign tourists, pretty much everything, or at least foreign tourists who spoke English. I'm not sure, you know, if you spoke French, if you necessarily would have gotten around as well. But everything both in the city and in Shanghai Disneyland, the park, was in Mandarin and English. And even some cast members, most of the frontline cast members that we were interacting with were locals. We're not Western cast members from Walt Disney World or Disneyland. There were a lot over there in management positions to mm-hmm. kind of help the park get on its legs. Most of them are now back in the States, from what I understand. But even while we were over there, most of the cast members we interacted with were locals, and some of them spoke more English than others, but they usually understood enough English or could point us to someone who understood more English that we were able to communicate. And pretty much all of the signage was in both Mandarin and English. So that turned out to not be much of an issue at all.
Okay. If you're looking at the park as a whole, all the lands, what areas do you think it really excels in? Like attractions, dining, atmosphere, whatever.
One thing that jumps off from that list for me right away is the quick service dining was actually some of the best and cheapest that I've ever had in a Disney park. That was not what I expected at all. I didn't really know what to expect in terms of dining, but the quick service dining there was incredible. Really high quality food, really large portion sizes, and by Disney park standards, at least very, very reasonably priced. So that was awesome. The attraction slate, I think the majority of what's there is really, really good. I think really the only attraction that we were disappointed with was Voyage to the Crystal Grotto, which was particularly disappointing given that for me and Tom, at least, that was the attraction that we were most looking forward to. And so maybe our expectations were a little too high, but it was kind of like Storybook Land canal boats in Disneyland, minus nearly all of the charm of that attraction.
Well, it's unique because it goes like under the castle, right?
Yeah, it does. It goes under the castle for the grand finale, and I won't say anything about what happens in there because I don't want to spoil anything. But the majority of the attraction is you're essentially just floating past static figures with dancing water effects, and it's just really. To me anyway, it was kind of underwhelming. But aside from Voyage to the Crystal Grotto, nearly all of the attractions there I thought were very good. Pirates of the Caribbean is certainly the highlight. The Tron roller coaster is another highlight. That was really a lot of fun.
I have to ask though.
Yes.
Those seats look so uncomfortable to me.
You know, I didn't think they were that bad. I mean, the ride system is the attraction. The way you're leaning forward and riding it like a light cycle from Tron. Because if you take that away, it's essentially just Space Mountain with a Tron aesthetic. But the ride system, the way you're leaning forward in the light cycles, that's what makes you feel like, man, I'm riding a white cycle from Tron, like that's what makes that attraction unique and makes it a lot of fun. So I love that. I thought it was really cool.
Okay. I can see it when you word it like that. Jeremy, do you remember the attraction at Knott's Berry Farm?
Yes. The Pony, I already know where
Pony
going.
Express. Yeah, that was it. And you lean forward, and it was fine, but it was also like I just really want to sit up. Like, why am I leaning forward and facing the ground?
No, it was not fine. I felt molested the whole time I was riding that. Just the position you're in and the way things are, like, wrapped around your
okay.
joints.
I did not love it, and that's the vibe I get from this. But, I mean, at least Tron has a movie that it's basing it off of, so I can see how when you get on it, you're like, wow, I'm really on a light cycle, whatever that is. I'm sorry, I've never seen Tron. Don't crucify me, but anyway, so I get that. But anyway, from an outsider's perspective, that was the first thing I thought.
Did it have like Tron music though?
Yes. Yeah, the that whole area, the Tron coaster, the queue, the attraction itself, All of the music is taken from Daft Punk's score for Tron Legacy.
Nice. Okay, I like that.
And just looking at it, I mean, I've only seen pictures, but I imagine that Tomorrowland at night is a very cool thing to see.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that... So the park as a whole, and this is partly due to the smog issues that they have in Shanghai, but the park as a whole looks much better at night, I would say. Mm-hmm. We were very fortunate in that our second 2 days in the park were, from what I understand, considerably clearer than is typical for Shanghai. On a typical day, it tends to be very gray, very very overcast, or I mean it's not really overcast because it's smog, but it's the equivalent of looking overcast and hazy. And so at night, when things are lit up, they look a lot better than when everything is just kind of gray and dull and muted thanks to the smog. And Tomorrowland in particular, it looks really, really cool at night.
Did you get a chance to ride the Roaring Rapids?
Yes. And yeah, it's funny that you phrased the question like that, because we just barely got on that attraction. So that attraction was not fully completed while we were there. From what I understand, that's still the case. They were closing the attraction at 4 p.m. every day, or closing the line at 4 p.m. every day to continue work on it. That attraction almost always had the longest line in the park after Soarin'. Actually, I'm not sure if Soarin' had the longest line. I know Soarin' is the most visited attraction in the park, but in any case, Roaring Rapids line was pretty much always over 2 hours unless you rope dropped it. And even when we attempted to rope drop it, most times it was well over an hour by the time we could get to it. So we ended up waiting more than 2 hours. Tom and I, Sarah didn't want to wait. We ended up waiting more than 2 hours for that attraction, and ended up getting right to the front, and then it broke down. So we were very unhappy about that. That was our last day there, and thankfully, when we went and told guest relations about it, they were very, very nice and helped us get onto the attraction. So we just barely got on right before it closed our last day. So we were able to experience it. Now, from what I understand, the attraction we experienced is still not in a fully completed state, but we did get to go on it.
What was your thoughts? Spoiler alert for those that do not wish to know what happens on the attraction. What are your thoughts on the what's the name of the creature that's in this? The Croc something or another.
Croc. Is the name of the monster, the giant crocodile monster. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's certainly the most impressive part of the attraction, is the Karak animatronic. Other than that, honestly, it's Kali River Rapids, more or less, which, at least as far as I'm concerned, is not one of Disney's best attractions. But the Karak animatronic was really impressive. That was really cool and really fun to see.
Good. Cool.
I have to ask about Soarin' Over the Horizon. Did you get a chance to ride that?
Yes.
Okay.
We did.
The pictures of that queue look incredible. It may not, it may just translate really well in photos. I don't know. But it's certainly not the queue we have here in Florida with Soarin'.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Yeah, that queue is beautiful. Unfortunately, we only did that once, which, I mean, I shouldn't say unfortunately, because it really only made sense for us to do it once, since we can do that one, you know, at Disneyland and Epcot. But it was. I'm glad we did that, even though the attraction is 95% the same, just because that queue is really, really cool.
Yeah, just in case our listeners don't know, like, it kind of gives you the sense that you're under a starlit sky, right? That's the vibe.
Yes.
I got. Yeah, that's neat. And it was also kind of cool being in Disney World, where Soarin' Around the World was opening, and then Disneyland, where it was opening, which has a few differences, and then Soarin' Over the Horizon was also opening across the world. It just felt like we were all kind of united in our Soarin' grand openings.
Yep. Yeah, the... China got theirs first.
That's true.
Did it end in Shanghai?
It did. That's yes. Cool. So every, well, I mean, spoiler alert, I guess, but every...
we already spoiled it on a few episodes ago.
Every Soarin' Over the World ends in its respective location. Other than that, the ride part of Soarin' over the Horizon in Shanghai is exactly the same as it is in Epcot and California Adventure.
All right, good to know. And it should end in that specific park, I think. I think that makes a world of difference, but maybe that's just...
Yeah. So it doesn't end, again, spoiler alert, it doesn't end in the park, it ends in the city of Shanghai.
Oh.
But yeah.
Well, that's cool.
It's localized to the region.
That kind of makes sense, because the park probably wasn't finished when they really needed to film that.
It ends at a construction site.
Clearly, they were not afraid of using a lot of CG in this iteration of Soarin', but I think had they wanted to show a completed Shanghai Disneyland, it would have been about 95% CG.
So like the Taj Mahal, basically.
Yeah, yeah, when yeah. they were making Soarin'.
I see. Okay, well, in a second, I want you to give some tips to someone who is considering visiting the overseas Disney parks. But before that, do you just have any like overall takeaways of, like, you were there for the opening day of a Disney park? I mean, who gets to say they did that, you know?
Marty Sklar.
That is true. He's been there for all of them.
All of them. Yeah, that should be on his tombstone. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the park as a whole, the two things that stand out to me the most about that park are how beautiful it is and how massive and impressive the scale of it is. And this is coming from someone who, again, as I said before, had been fairly skeptical, trying to temper expectations with regard to the park. I really was blown away by how beautiful it looks in person and how well most of the park fits together. It's a very, very impressive theme park and well worth visiting, in my opinion.
That's cool. See, that's a testament to the fact that you can't believe every negative thing you read on the internet, especially when it's being spread by people who have heard it from another source. I mean, you know, it was just like one person after the other was picking up these negative stories and then feeding off of them. But I'm really glad that your experience was positive.
Yeah, and I would say to that point, I would say I so far anyway, I have not talked to anyone who's actually visited Shanghai who did not have an overwhelmingly positive experience. I think the Brickers would agree. I mean, you can go to DisneyTouristBlog.com and read their trip report, but they were kind of in the same boat, very tempered expectations, and they were also blown away by the quality of the park. So that seems to be the general consensus of almost everyone who's visited that I'm aware of.
Awesome. So did you have any tips for anyone who's considering visiting Hong Kong, Shanghai, Tokyo, anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, I would say it's well worth doing. if visiting the international Disney parks is something that is a priority for you, you know, I would say do what you need to do to make it happen. A lot of people have been criticized for saying things like this before, but I'm going to say it anyway and then expound on it a little bit. It's often not as difficult to travel internationally as people expect it to be. Certainly there are reasons why for some people it's not feasible or it is very difficult. But there are, if you have a little bit of flexibility or you don't mind doing a lot of research into what's known as travel hacking or ways to save money or travel considerably cheaper by not paying so much of the trip out of pocket, paying with points and miles and stuff like that you can earn from credit cards and things like that, that can significantly reduce the cost of an overseas trip. In particular, I know several people who are doing a combined, you can call it a grand circle tour of the Asian Disney parks, where they have one round trip, what's called an open jaw ticket, where they fly into Hong Kong and fly out of Tokyo, or fly into Tokyo and fly out of Hong Kong, and then they just kind of have short hop flights in between Tokyo, Shanghai, and Hong Kong. That can tie into the 144-hour transit without visa program that I mentioned earlier. If you are entering and leaving Shanghai from two different countries, and the Brickers over at DisneyTouristBlog.com, they have a great article on how to do open jaw trips to Asia. That's what we did with our Shanghai and Hong Kong itinerary. So unfortunately, to really get into a lot of those things is beyond the scope of a podcast interview, but the information is out there if you are motivated to do the research.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned Tom's blog, Disney Tourist Blog, because I was going to mention not only his trip report of the grand opening for Shanghai Disneyland, but also, yeah, as I've started getting to the point in my life where I've thought of making one of these overseas trips, his blog has been super, super helpful in not only like planning hotels and things like that, but also just assuring me that it is possible and it's not as hard as my American mind thinks it has to be. You know, it has to be so impossible to do these things. And just reading his blog makes me see that it can be done.
Yeah, for sure.
Is there anything about the park that you just hated or you wish was different or you want to complain about?
I wouldn't say there's anything that was absolutely terrible. You know, I mentioned I was disappointed by a voyage to the Crystal Grotto. I think the worst part of the park is unfortunately totally beyond the control of Disney, and that is the smog issue, which I mentioned earlier. We got really lucky in that two of our 3 days in the park were very low pollution days, and that made it a lot more pleasant to just be there and be breathing cleaner air, but it also makes the park look a lot nicer. And from my perspective as someone who's very into photography, that was also nice for photography purposes as well. But I would say that's the that is the worst aspect of the park in my opinion. But unfortunately there's you know, that's something that China has to address on a regulations level. That's not really something that Disney can address.
Mm-hmm. Listen, if that's the worst thing you can say about a park that 3 months ago people were worried if it would even be done in time, I think that's saying a lot for this park. So good on them. Before you go, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you online?
Yeah, so my we didn't really talk a whole lot about my photography thing, but I
go for it. Say whatever you want to.
I'm a it's not my full-time job, but kind of as a side thing, I am a travel photographer, both for fun and for freelance as well. So my website is markwillardphotography.com, and you can find links to all of my various social media accounts on my website. But pretty much all of them, if you look for Mark Willard Photography or M. Willard Photos on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Flickr, etc., you can find me there.
And not to mention, he's also an amateur Captain America cosplayer and probably the best one out there.
The best.
Thank you. Yes, I also sometimes share photos of my Halloween costumes on my photography account. So, yeah, you'll see some of that too.
That's right. I seem to remember Indiana Jones as well.
Yes, Indiana Jones was another one. I'm hoping to branch out with a few new costumes this year, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, and I feel like we should also mention, if you are new to our show, way back on episode 49, Mark joined us and talked a little bit about his photography, but also gave some tips for people who want to know how to get good shots at the park. So you can always go back and listen to that. But man, thank you so much for joining us. I was so excited to hear what it was like to be there, and I'm glad you shared with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure to be back on and talk with you guys.
You got it. All right, well, I think that does it for this episode. Go find us online. We're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram at Mad Chatters, and you can always send emails to comments@madchatters.net. So that does it for this week, and we'll see you next time.
Take a little time to find the magic in every day.
Bye-bye now.